Gen Zs and Alphas, who are currently moving into being the two largest consumer cohorts, and you have some of them in class at FIT.
I do.
So that's it. Yeah, you know, what is their view on luxury products?
Retail Unwrapped is a weekly podcast hosted by Robin Lewis and Shelley Cohan from The Robin Report. Each episode dives into the latest trends and developments in the retail industry. Join them as they discuss interesting topics and interview industry leaders, keeping you in the loop with everything retail.
Hi, everybody, and thanks for joining our weekly podcast. I'm Robin Lewis, founder and CEO of The Robin Report, along with my podcast partner, Shelley Cohan. And today, Shelley and I are going to go through a discussion of the not very transparent implosion of e-commerce luxury multi-branded websites. Now, that's e-commerce, keep in mind. As reported in the New York Times, some of the biggest names in fashion e-commerce, including Farfetch and Matches Fashion, have imploded. So what does that mean for fashion brands, investors, and customers? Shelley?
Yeah, Robin. I mean, they say that Matches is bankrupt. Farfetch has been bailed out. They got bailed out in December, like at the last hurrah. And Net-a-Porter is shaky. Its future is shaky. So Matches is owned by the Fraser Group. They bought Matches back in December for about $66 million. But that was really bad homework on the part of Fraser Group. It just so happens that the 10-year-old luxury brand Algeria, and also, by the way, Queen Elizabeth II award-winning jewelry brand, which 630,000 of their projected revenue would be coming from Matches Fashions, they ran into a little bit of a problem when they were planning their future purchases. So Algeria and Matches Fashions were talking about future shipments, but the problem is that Matches owed them a lot of unpaid invoices from the previous, that merchandise that has been previous shipped. And so what Matches tried to do was they tried to negotiate a discount on past invoices to then try to purchase more goods. But the founder of Algeria definitely did not allow that to happen. And what's crazy is that the next day, like literally the next day, the company Matches went into bankruptcy. They weren't commercially viable, I think is what the Fraser Group said. Yeah. So I when I looked at this, I'm like, God, I feel like I'm creating a case study for my students. Right. Like, seriously, how does this happen in today's world? You know, this world of mergers and acquisitions and due diligence and, you know, Sarbanes-Oxley. Like, how does this happen?
Yeah, it's crazy. And Shelley, Matches Fashion is just the most recent example, right?
Right.
Of many luxury goods being sold online and failing. And by the way, Shelley, this reminds me of a lot of the rantings I go on into on, which you well know, about the fact that the majority of startup online brands, you know, they're still being funded by what I call know-nothing investors who are speculating, or I should say, to use the downright concept of gambling, they figure that they may lose 9 out of 10, but they're betting on the 1 out of 10, which may give them a huge win. But though, you know, but then there is Farfetch, once a hot platform for independent boutiques and even revered by the luxury majors out there. They merely got a pass out of going into bankruptcy in December by getting bailed out by a South Korean group. And I'll try to get this name correct, Coupang. And they got a half a billion dollars as a bridge loan. Incredible. But Shelley, a little context here. In 2021, they had a valuation of $40 billion.
Wow.
So what in the heck is going on, Shelley?
Well, don't forget about Net-A-Porter too. They're also on the edge. So there was a big deal that failed between Richemont and the parent company, Yox, Y-O-O-X, Yox, and Fairfetch. But, you know, this is the thing. And this is the thing I want to stress is that when you talk about e-com luxury is doing fine. In fact, it's growing. So,
yeah, Well,
global e-coms grew like 7% last year, and it's going to projected to grow another 5% this year. This according to CoreSight Research. And what's crazy is, you know, Bain & Company has another forecast about online luxury sales. They would rise from about being 20% of the market today to account for as much as 33% by 2030.
Wow.
So the demand from consumers is there for luxury, you know, e-com business, but they prefer to buy from the branded companies.
Ah, so there you go. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. So this goes back to what you've written two books about and you talk about all the time, this unique value proposition, you know, 101, as I would say, that these luxury companies, they create this high loyalty with their customers who then prefer to shop direct with the brand.
So
they're not, they don't want to go to these multi-branded e-com luxury sites.
You know, Shelley, there is some logic as to why this seeming serial meltdown of those e-commerce multi-branded channels. There is some logic to why this is happening. I mean, for a decade before the pandemic, which was also the time when buying online was a new way to shop, and especially for luxury, you know, exclusive products, delivery services, and free returns. So then the pandemic hits, and the good news, brands sold online was, of course, consumers didn't have to leave their homes. So as sales began to soar during the pandemic, and thus prices kept scaling upward. And then, of course, the big brands start to invest more heavily in their own online infrastructure. And worse, piling more and more inventory on top of already too much inventory, as we both know. And then, guess what? You throw in the bomb of horrific supply chain disruptions. And then, Shelley, throw in an increasingly more competitive market. And so, therefore, it was Katie barred the door.
Well, I mean, I think the other factor you remember back in 2022, coming out of the pandemic, as you described there, you know, the luxury brands were very determined that they wanted control of their brands, specifically the pricing and the distribution. So they also wanted to collect the direct, you know, analytics from their customer shopping. So having direct-to-consumer business became very important to them. So they actually stopped selling to these third-party luxury e-com websites. So, and I don't mean like stopped 100%, but they pulled back a lot. And so these websites like Farfetch Matches and My Teresa, they started creating what they were calling e-concessions, which is what you and I know as a marketplace today. So they would offer the brand a place on the website to sell their own product. So when a customer comes in, they can click on that brand and it takes it to the branded website, giving the brand back the control, right?
Right.
But
right.
The problem with that is the hosted website. So like for Farfetch and Matches, they're actually going to make less money on an e-concessions than they would if they bought products wholesale. So my big question is, why would a luxury customer want to go to a multi-branded website to get redirected to the brand's direct website? It just, to me, it doesn't make any sense. So Bain & Company actually showed that in 2023, that was the first year. This is a crazy statistic, Robin. So 2023 is the first year where sales of personal luxury goods were 52% owned retail.
Wow.
So
wow. In
this category, wholesale has always dominated the market, but now owned luxury is the predominant channel. And even if you go back to 2019 and you look at like 2019 to 2023 at the CAGR for that, I mean, owned is up 14%, whereas wholesale is only up 1%.
Wow.
So
yeah.
case in point, these multi-branded luxury e-com sites are going bankrupt, heading to bankrupt, or just gone. Matches, Farfetch, you know, Net-a-Porter. So the only actually multi-branded luxury e-com sites that may be doing well are like department stores, Saks, Neiman's, Nordstrom's.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're probably doing really well, but, you know, they have their own struggles being, you know, department stores. And we really don't know the P&L on those e-com sites because it's mixed into the total revenues business, including brick and mortar. So, you know, a luxury analyst at Bernstein said, you know, any dreams of becoming an Uber for luxury distribution has turned into a nightmare and has proved impossible to realize.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, Shelley, that could be an amen, right?
Right.
You know, brands like LVMH, Hermes, Kering, they're all masters at creating an emotional bond with their core consumers. So it is a lifestyle and a deep connection. So why would the consumer kind of leave the comfort of the brand to shop at a multi-site? Unless, of course, they can get their coveted brand for less with a discount.
Right.
But
right.
The brand are not going to allow this to happen. And discounts, rightly so, only further worsen the operational costs of these websites.
Well, also, as these luxury brands get deeper and deeper into social media and connecting with these, you know, content creators, We just had our podcast about this a few weeks ago, how content creators are the cultural leaders of the 21st century. And, you know, these connections, these tentacles between the brand and the consumers are only going to grow stronger and stronger. In fact, there's really only one multi-branded luxury e-commerce company that is actually doing well. And I'll tell you exactly why, Robin.
Well, Shelley, I am sure you are talking about My Teresa. But tell me, what makes them more successful?
Well, My Teresa really has invested in these in events and experiences, and they're offering these to their loyal customers. So the company has figured out you can't just sell multi-branded luxe products, but it took a page literally out of the luxury brand handbook, and they started offering these events. So for Fashion Week back in February, My Teresa had their big event at a bar in New York City, the Temple Bar, and they had plenty of influencers on hand for that one. This coming May, they plan to host a retreat in Italy with a luxury brand in May. And My Teresa has been known to bring clients to like special events. So like, for example, a private rehearsal of New York City Ballet, or over the last few years, a weekend retreat in Capri with Pucci, or a cocktail party with Dolce & Gabbana in Miami, or a summer escape in Saint-Tropez with Valentino.
Well, there you are. Experience.
That's right.
You know, I can see how the luxury customers would gravitate to those events. I mean, it's the high-spend shoppers just simply want more. So,
right.
You know, without the events and the experience, the multi-branded luxury e-commerce site becomes a price war. Remember that race to the bottom? And
that is,
even if they can get the products, even if they can get the products anymore, price wars will only add cost to the margins and make the business model even more difficult to see long-term profits. I mean, you know, luxury market analyst Robert Burke, as you know, Shelley, said, the cost of successful digital marketing and customer acquisition spiraled higher and higher, and investors were less and less willing to front the costs. He noted that some companies, like Mother Teresa, had fared better than others, but he cautioned that the last 3 months and had brought to the marketplace a painful kind of reset that had been a long time coming. And then he went on to say, we are about to see a major evolution in luxury e-commerce. Or perhaps a better word would be a big correction, right?
Probably, yeah.
So, and he ended by saying, overall, online sales for luxury fashion went up last year. So this isn't a shrinking market. What is changing, and this is a big deal, Shelley, is who is getting slices of a slower growing pie.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And we, Robin, we haven't even talked about live streaming. This is going to be another nail in the coffin for these multi-branded lux sites. As more and more luxury brands really start offering live stream with their highly trained staff, it's only going to deepen that connection with their core market.
Yep.
We know TikTok is going big with live events, and CoreSight estimates that U.S. live streaming commerce sales were to hit $50 billion last year and potentially account for more than 5% of total e-commerce in the country by 2026. And we have no way of understanding or knowing where the resale market's going to go, right? Resale market's hot, very hot. And just after 7 months of launching live shopping on Poshmark, so Poshmark is the, you know, resale market for luxury goods. Poshmark hosts over 100,000 live shopping events every month.
Okay.
And if you think about it, these resale markets are a great way for these young consumers to get luxury goods that they can afford and begin their journey towards, you know, a specific brand. So aspirational products really as an entry point into a brand from these resale sites. So, you know, that's the beginning of the end, really.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. you know, live streaming is a great point. Even Macy's started its lifestyle events virtually. And you sent me a clip of one of those. And they also plan to host live shopping segments right in Herald Square. And to extend its live stream commerce capabilities to their vendors. In addition to live streaming and creator content, luxury brands are also investing in richer store experiences. So at the end of the day, brands continue to build the long-term loyalty with their target market. So shopping somewhere else does not make sense for them. And accordingly, Burke's closing comment, I think, really is an amen, Shelley. And also one more issue to throw into this bucket. Gen Zs and Alphas, who are currently moving into being the two largest consumer cohorts, and you have some of them in class at FIT.
I do.
So that's it. Yeah. What is their view on luxury products? I mean, I've been thinking for some time that there is some research out there that says these young people are looking more for natural, authentic, and environmentally managed brands. And, you know, the whole DEI thing, you know, saving the planet, et cetera, and so forth.
That's so right.
What do your kids tell you?
Well, I'll tell you what, the youth are really trending ahead of previous generations. And I believe most of this is due just to the incredible access to social media. So millennials and Gen Z globally accounted for all of the luxury market's growth in 2022. This according to Bain & Company, who does this big luxury report. Spending by Gen Z and the younger Gen Alpha, keep in mind, those under 13, Gen Alpha is under 13 right now, They're going to make up a third of spending in the luxury goods market by 2030.
Unbelievable.
A third. So Gen Z consumers are entering the luxury market actually earlier, purchasing high-end goods, whether it's beauty, designer shoes, purses, accessories. They're purchasing these high-end goods by age 15 on average. That's 3 to 5 years earlier than millennials did.
That's amazing to me, Shelley. I just can't get out of my head with these young people spending that kind of money. But all I can say, and again, both of the books that I co-authored, we talked about more stores, more stuff, more, and more. There is one thing that is actually a fact, and that is we are overstored, overstuffed. And so our younger generations are talking the talk about saving the planet. But when it comes to walking the walk and buying less because of all these great causes, I mean, these kids, these daughters, go out and pay a fortune for a Birkin bag to show off. Well, they're still talking the talk.
That's if they can get a Birkin bag. Those are hard
to
come by.
That's right. Yeah, we've been through that, right? A Birkin bag and a Kelly bag. Grace Kelly. Anyway, at the end of the day, these kids must be from some very wealthy parents. That's all I can say. My hope, and actually my belief, and I do believe this, is that these kids will reverse the obsessive consumption addiction, I'll call it, for more and more stuff. And I think at the end of the day, indeed, we'll find constructive ways to save the environment. And now I say amen, Shelley. And I also want to thank all of you, our listeners who joined us today. Thanks again.
That's a great way to end it, Robin. And next week, we have a fantastic podcast with one of our sponsors, Lily AI, which we're going to dive into AI-driven results your CFO can believe in. So the pressure on executives and CFOs to be able to quantify in the impact of AI enabling tools is greater than ever. So we're going to dive into that as a topic for next week.
Yeah, I think that'll be great. And once again, if any of you have a topic that you've been thinking about and would like Shelley and I to discuss and cover, send me an email, robin@therobinreport.com. And thanks again.
Thank you for listening to Retail Unwrapped. We'll be back in 1 week with another podcast. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any podcast service. If you have questions, ideas for a podcast, or anything else, please contact us via therobinreport.com.